Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content meant for guys that are up in the North or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land. I'm your host, Joe Baia, and on this week's show, we are talking with Jeff Kahn. Jeff is a landowner who recently enrolled his property in a forest carbon program. We're going to be learning exactly what that is, what it's been like for Jeff, and any advice he may have for any other landowners that are considering forest carbon programs, or really any type of conservation program for that matter. Jeff, welcome to Hunting Land. First thing I want to know more about is your land in particular. Tell us a little bit about your place. And, you know, you've got an interesting story. You grew up in Queens, New York. How did you find yourself a rural landowner?
Yeah, so I was born in Manhattan, and I spent the first couple of decades of my life growing up in Queens. And behind my house, there was a really nice, as a kid, I thought it was a big wooded lot. And I used to play there with my neighbors all the time, and it had trees, and I just loved going out there. And then I kind of remember one day coming back from school, and there was a bulldozer sitting in back of my backyard, and everything was gone. And I kind of missed that. And so I love the city. I love the energy of New York. I know it well. I get why people want to be there. It's exciting. It's vibrant. But the woods spoke to part of me, and the country spoke to part of me, living in the country and in a more rural setting and being kind of connected in that way to the land and nature. And so I realized after college that I didn't want to be in the city anymore. And so I started thinking about what kind of a situation I'd like to live in. And I wanted to be kind of close to New York because my family was there, but I wanted to be in the country. And so I kind of started looking in the Virginia area and ended up settling down here.
That's very interesting. It just pulls people. You know, certain folks just they can't help it. They feel led to be out in the open countryside. I'm one of those people myself.
No, I get it. I mean, I know lots of the kids that grow up here, they move to the city, and
yeah,
it's exciting and it's vibrant and it's really alive. But that wasn't the kind of alive I wanted to pursue at that.
Yeah, I understand. Well, what drew you to your particular piece of land?
So I had started looking for land on my own, and I wanted something that had a nice mixture of woods and pasture. And 40 years ago, sadly, things were a lot more affordable then. And I was able to find this piece of property, 80 acres, and very steep woods behind my house. And then it transitions into rolling pasture in front of my house and then to the road. So it was remote. I can see lights from other houses, but I can't see other houses from where I am. So it had that feeling. It was kind of like a miniature version of where I grew up because the woods were behind me in my house. And And the yard was in front of me. So it's kind of a miniature, a bigger version of where I grew up. And so I was able to swing getting this place. And it was kind of a diamond in the rough. The pastures had been neglected for years. There was an old house site, but the house had fallen down, but it was a gorgeous house site. There are these really large diameter oak trees in the front of the building site. And it just spoke to me. I had enough energy back then to go and clear the pastures and renovate them and build a house and develop the property.
It's so cool to hear you recount that. And, you know, you started out on this, in this effort to take this piece of woods and these pastures and start doing something with it. I think, you know, you're talking about the city being exciting, but to me that's exciting. That stirs me up way more than big lights and shows and restaurants. You know, it's like, hey, here's this piece of ground that I get to take care of.
Right.
And there's no rules necessarily. Maybe that you kind of wish there would be some rules sometimes, because there's so much you can do and you want to do it the right way. Man, it can be overwhelming at times. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about some of the key milestones, key projects that you've Sure. undertaken over the last 40 years?
Yeah, well, so the very first project was I wanted to get on the land. And so I was lucky enough to have some friends who had some architect friends, and they helped me design a house and the location behind those big towering oaks. And I also was lucky enough that my college buddy had moved 20 minutes away from me. And he was a carpenter. And so we hired one other guy, and the three of us built the house. And so that was, you know, that then the house was built, and that was my first priority to get on. We moved in. I'd say the next priority was to renovate the fields. So it was all overgrown with persimmon and cedar. So I went through and cut them off at ground level. Then I also planted, it was clear from the pasture to the road, and I went in and planted a thousand or so pine trees along the road, which are huge now. I put trails in. Then my next priority was I had a really nice site for a pond. And I had the help back then, it was called the Soil Conservation Service, and they would come in and they would design and supervise the development of your pond. So they'd give you a list of contractors, you get bids, you'd come in, you choose one, they come and they give you the plans, and then they watch the construction to make sure that it was all up to their standards. I think it was a part of the Soil Conservation Service, did a cost share because I wanted to have cattle on my property. And so they basically paid for a watering trough behind the dam, or that I'd have to fence away from, you know, I'd keep the dam part away from the cows, but then the trough would be beyond that in the pasture. And then they could have a gravity fed water all year round, because the creeks sometimes in the drought and the drought times of the year, they dry up, and it was a reliable source of water. That was really fun, floating in the pond for the first time with my young daughter and wife. It was just really just spectacular. Stocked with fish, which I'm still fishing.
Yeah.
And I just kept on taking on different projects. So the next project, because, you know, I really wanted to put the pond in. That was important to me. So the trade-off was, well, my wife wants a barn. So I got my buddy carpenter friend to come back. We put up this barn, and so she could try a couple of horses. I also had fenced it so that we could have some cattle in there. And initially, and I was a city boy, so I didn't know anything. So I had this old timer farmer. He was just fantastic. So he said, well, I'll bring over, I can run some of my steers over there and I'll keep your fences up and I'll bush hog it once or twice a year. And I said, great. So I learned a lot from him, and really we got to be close friends. And then eventually I was able to take on some myself. And so I'd up until recently had some steers on the property.
That's really cool. Like I say, it keeps you busy for sure. If you're like me, on the way to get a job done, I usually make a list that's got five new things on it. And
yes,
it's never ending, but it's interesting and it's gratifying. Like you said, I'm sure that first float in the pond was just unbelievable. And I'm sure when you stepped in, I would bet that to this day, when you step in your house and knowing that you were the one that built it, I mean, that's just got to be an awesome feeling.
It's one of the most rewarding experiences I have. I still just am amazed by it. It's the best investment I've ever made. It's also, I remember the first time I sat down to a dinner and realized I grew everything on the plate.
Yeah, that is that's just a great feeling. Like you said, you can't put a number on that from an investment perspective, right? But it's one of the land ownership is one of the only things that gives you those types of returns.
Right.
And you recently enrolled in a forest carbon program. Now that is one thing that a lot of landowners, maybe they've heard about carbon credits, and mm-hmm. we've done some podcasts on what they are and trying to help people understand them better. But what were your motivations for doing it?
Well, I have a concern about the climate change issues, and I thought that this was an interesting program. They NCX just happened to send me a postcard. I guess they did a mass mailing, and I got it, and I thought, well, this looks interesting. I initially thought it was just junk mail, but I thought, no, this actually makes sense. And I heard of carbon credits before. And so I contacted them, and they got back to me, and it sounded really interesting to me because it kind of matched up with the values of what I wanted to do with the property anyway. So it seemed like a good match. And I signed up for the program.
You know, a lot of landowners feel like forest carbon programs are kind of smoke and mirrors in the sense that they're going to get paid to do something they were going to do anyway. A lot of landowners are going to let those trees grow anyway.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to them. Like, how am I all of a sudden going to start getting paid to not cut trees down that I wasn't going to cut down?
Yeah. No.
Can you share your understanding of why these forest carbon programs exist and who's driving the demand?
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand their point of view, and I think it's a valid point, but I think it's a minor point. My understanding of the climate change is, we're pumping tremendous amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere, and most economists think that the most efficient system is to tax the polluters. That's not, at least at this point, economic or politically viable alternative. That's not going to happen. This is not as efficient a system, but the people that are putting tons of carbon, the companies that are putting tons of carbon in the atmosphere, they're not paying a tax, but in a sense, everyone else is paying it. You have homeowners insurance rates going through the roof in some places. Some insurers are not insuring I hear they're pulling out of Florida. They just won't insure me.
I'm in Florida. That's definitely a thing that's happening.
So basically, we're paying a tax, or we're paying a tax one way or the other. We're paying, we're subsidizing the polluters at this point. This is a way to kind of subsidize the people that are absorbing some of that pollution. So yeah, I guess maybe they wouldn't cut it anyway, but cut their property anyway. But you know, to me, it's a minor. It's really the issue is so much bigger than that, that this is really a minor objection, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I look at my own place when I think about this issue, and like I've got about 45% of my property is bottomland hardwoods, and it could be cut. I mean, it's not that it's perfectly legal, it's perfectly doable in the right conditions, but you know, in that area, it's a sensitive area. It's you're not just going to go in there with the wrong weather conditions, and there's a lot of issues with having loggers in there in the first place, just because in today's day and age, the types of loggers you really need to get in and cut an area like that, a lot of them don't exist anymore because they really need to go in with chainsaws and you know and do it manually. And at least I haven't been able to find one in my area that wants to try to tackle the job. And it's not that I want to go in and clear cut it or anything, but you know. There's a scenario there where I want to go in there and have something done for the good of the stand, not for, you know, not necessarily for the economic gain. But on a lot of properties that I visit and talk with landowners, you know, there does come a time where whether it's them or their heirs, they look at that stand of timber and they say, you know, it's not doing us any good. That's the way they look at it. You know, it's there, we need to extract some income out of that. Can you explain kind of how program works functionally, for you?
So what I liked about what NCX basically found found another program for me, and I signed a long-term carbon contract, which I kind of like. It allows me to go in, I notify them, and I have to practice best management practices, which I want, and allows me to go in and do some selective cutting if I notify them, and then they come back and they say, okay, well, we've got to reduce your carbon credit a little bit. That's, you know, that's fine. And I want, when I'm not going to be here forever, I want that covenant on the property. I don't want the next owner to come in and clear cut, or,
Right.
you know, I put a conservation easement in with the county because, you know, I put all this effort into making this really nice integrated place. I don't want someone to go, well, I can just chop it up and make a bunch of money, and won't I be smart? I mean, I would like my idea to sustain for a little while. And so
Right.
if they're required to have to do what I think is the right thing, then I've kind of passed on that legacy. When I put in my pond, I was thrilled. Someone bought a big chunk of property next to me, where one of the creeks is that feeds my pond, originates about, I don't know, maybe 50 feet into this person's property. Well, they came in and they just really cut it to the bone. And of course, 2 years later, I've got a bunch of silt in my, you know,
Right.
I just don't think that that's a responsible way to, to me, that, you know, I mean, he has every right to. I get it. That's, you know, I'm not like, you know, saying he broke the law. That was his right. And I know people get very sensitive about, don't tell me what I can do on my property kind of a thing. But,
Sure.
you know, it'd be nice to know that when I pass, that that's not going to happen to the land I own for 100 years.
Yeah, your experience as a child, you know, showing up and you have this piece of land that you'd come to love essentially, and it wasn't yours, but you got a lot of enjoyment out of that piece of land, and you show up one day and it's completely gone. You know, what you knew is completely gone. I've had that same experience myself with my brother. There was a particular piece of property that we loved to hunt on, and you know, and we hunted on it for most of our childhood, and showed up one day in our teenage years and it was just gone. Well, you know, I mean, completely clear cut. And I understand both sides of that coin, but that is what drew me into land ownership, was that, hey, you know what? That landowner had the absolute right to go in and cut that timber the way that he cut it or they cut it. And I don't want him to lose that right.
Right.
But I want to have my own place that I can manage and I can treat the way I want to treat it, and do things the way I want to do it. And I'm like you. I hope that I can inspire the next steward of my place to continue to use best management practices.
Right.
But there are some things you can do to make sure that that is done.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about giving back your division rights to the county. And you mentioned putting your property in a conservation easement. I think I understand your motivation. What were the results of that?
The results now I know that whoever the future owner will be, that they're not going to be able to chop it up like some people do. They buy a big chunk and they chop. They do as they maximize their divisions and they sell off the lots. And of course, property is going through the roof, so there's more and more payoff for that.
Right.
But I was able to turn my division rights back to the county. And in return, I got compensated. They have the, in Virginia, at least, they have this really great program. I believe it's still in existence, where they get an appraisal of what the loss of the division rights is monetarily. And they quadruple that as a tax credit against your state taxes. And you get to write that off up to 8 or 10 years or so. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's fantastic. I was, now there's a case of being rewarded for something you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, it was great. And, you know, and since I'm the owner of the property now, the owning property, like you were saying, it's, to me, it's kind of like a relationship. What kind of, you can have a relationship with an investment, a stock you own, and you know, you buy it and you sell it and whatever, and you're trying to maximize your return from it. Or you can have more of kind of what we're talking about, where you're getting value back in other ways.
Right. And, you know, like you said, you gave up your rights to do that. You're not only is the next person who owns your land not going to be able to do that, but you weren't able to do that. You were not able to go in and take advantage of those incentives to chop that property up,
right,
and turn it, you know, and turn, you know, what is currently your property into a residential neighborhood. And we're seeing that happen in so many places. And
right,
it does make you wonder, you know, if everybody has that mindset of let's try to take this land to the quote unquote highest and best use, then at some point where are the wild places going to be?
Right.
Where, you know, where are the woodlands going to
be?
So I definitely understand that motivation. All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida has over a century of experience providing financing for people who live, work, or play in the country. Farm Credit is here to help you make your dream of country living a reality. Their unique cooperative structure allows them to return some of their profits back to their borrowers. This patronage distribution effectively lowers a borrower's rate. To get started with your first or next land purchase, give them a call at 855-GO-RURAL or visit them at www.gorural.net.
Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com.
You know, going back to the forest carbon program, another big misconception that people have is they see the length of these programs and it immediately turns them off because of what you just said earlier. I don't want anybody telling me what I can and can't do on my property. Now, I totally understand that sentiment. Mm-hmm. That being said, on a piece of timberland, what I want to do is I want to be able to go in. I want to be able to hunt that property. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to selectively harvest trees off that property for both the health of the timber that remains mm-hmm. and also for economic reasons. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, because I was surprised to hear you say that you're still able to go in and manage the stand. It's not like it's got a piece of yellow tape around it and you're not allowed to go in there anymore.
Yeah, no. It's not that restrictive a program. You can go in and you can selectively cut. They have a little bit of oversight, which I think is fine. I want to do it the responsible way. And so if I wanted to thin something out, or I think the last time I cut, it was some ash trees were really getting mature. Of course, we have the ash borer, so I wanted to get that thinned. And it's not all that restrictive. It's just kind of oversight. I think the impression I get is they want to be sure that the credits they're selling are real credits. Because if you don't have a viable currency, then no one's going to think it's worth anything. So they do a lot of due diligence. When I signed up, they had a forester come and survey the property. Then about a month ago, they had the same forester come with three other guys. One was to interview me. The other was to verify what the forester was seeing. I don't even know what the third guy was there for, but I mean, so they're really careful about, you know, and they do these LIDAR pictures. They're really careful that what they are selling is real. And, you know, those services have a value because it probably makes the carbon credit market a more viable, real market. You can tell people, I understand the consciousness of don't tell me what I can and can't do. But in essence, we're all being told that anyway. If you told me, you know, don't tell me what I can do, I'm going to go and open, I'm going to dig a big pit and dump nuclear waste in there. You know, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. The government would stop you. Or I want to store open sewage. You know, I mean, there are already limitations on what we can do with our property. This is just more of a limitation. This is limiting you to the things that are proven forestry management improvements.
And you get to know what these things are before you start. Yeah. You know, it's not like they're going to show up one day and say, you know what, we've figured out the best management practices have changed, so you're no longer allowed to do what we agreed upon.
You're right.
You know, you mentioned that you received a mailer from NCX and they reached out to you promoting these forest carbon programs. Mm-hmm. There's a ton. NCX has changed a lot. And there's a ton of programs out there, not just for forest carbon, but all different kinds of natural capital programs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I recently received funding for a host of different activities on my property, everything from fire breaks to prescribed fires to timber stand improvements to invasive species management. You know, there's so many more programs out there that I was just blown away. What did it cost for you to participate with NCX?
There is no cost. I think that my understanding, and it's not necessarily an accurate understanding, is that NCX, well, originally I sold my carbon credits for 1 year to NCX. And I think their business model may have evolved a little bit. And now they seem to be more of a brokerage. So they will connect whatever you have in the area you have, and it's a very, very complex market, to the people that are interested in buying those. and they get what you need, and they match you up with the appropriate they match up the buyer and the seller. And but that seems like a good business model to me, because my understanding when I was talking to some of those guys that were doing their checking up on the forester who surveyed the property, well, the guy was telling me how complex the market really is and how many different programs there are. And at some point that may get all regulated or unified or something, but right now it's I don't know how it would begin to find a buyer of my credits. So no, they do not take any. I would imagine they got a referral fee from referring me to the person that bought my credits. They're taking a commission when the buyer pays for the credits, and that's kind of the nature. That seems like that's the nature of the market right now.
Yeah. You mentioned it, but there are so many. I mean, forest carbon programs were just one type. I couldn't believe how many different incentive programs there are, both public and private, that are there for things that I want to do on my property. One of my favorite ones that I found was a crop tree release program where, we've all been walking out through a stand of hardwoods and you see a big, beautiful oak tree that is just surrounded by young saplings. And, those saplings are taking away nutrients from the soil that are unable to, unable to make it to that big oak tree. And when you reduce that competition, that big oak tree produces a lot more acorns. And that is a good thing for wildlife. That's just one example. Me being a big hunter, we used to go do that kind of thing anyway. I mean, we went in and would try to enhance certain areas in that manner to make our hunting better. And now I find out that, hey, there's an incentive program for that, and you just have to document that you're doing it, and there's money out there to help you do it. Would you have found the carbon program that you enrolled in without NCX?
I probably would not have. No, I don't know how, I don't even know how I would start, which is why I think that that's a great idea to have kind of a brokerage for these programs. So yeah, I think they did a great job. They said we're not doing the yearly program in your area. We're sorry. But then, and I thought, oh well, I guess that was fun for a year. And then they reached out to me again about a half a year later and said, hey, we can refer you to somebody who can do this. And they hooked me up, and I signed a long-term contract with them. Getting back to what you said, you reminded me that just this last fall, I'm getting a little tired of repairing fences. I'm getting old, and I decided it was, I should maybe I should just stop doing the cattle anymore. And so I thought, what's the point of me bush hogging the steeper parts of the property? And I found this program that they came in and they planted 1,100 trees. I told them exactly where I wanted it. We flagged it out. They came in, they planted 1,100 trees. They put mulch down, they put the tubes on. They're going to come back and maintain it for 3 years. And it was free. It was absolutely free.
Yeah, you don't know what's out there. You got to look for it. And that's the thing, is that it's so hard to wade through program by program by program. And then you got to find out, okay, well, that sounds great. That program sounds great. Does it apply to my area? Does it apply to my county, my region? Does it apply to me, my income, all these different things? And you just, and but in most cases, you just don't even know these programs exist.
So you want an expert.
And yeah. How do they help you with the application process? That was something that when I was doing my EQIP application, I was like, typical government program, like it was a lot of paperwork. How'd they help you with the application process?
Well, my application process was not a big struggle. So they referred me to Forest Carbon Works, and then They, Forest Carbon Works, reached out to me. We had a phone interview. We decided that this was a good match, and they sent me an application. And I was a little tedious, but it was relatively straightforward. I mean, I had to send them, deed book references and a legal stuff and sign a bunch of stuff and that, like back and forth. But it, even though it was kind of like a lot of ministerial tasks, it was not overwhelming. It just I filled out their forms. I waited. They got back to me, the little back and forth, and then they sent me the contract. I signed the contract, and that's been it, other than the follow-ups. And most of these places, they want to do their due diligence, and they follow up, and they do a good job, and they reach out to me. Maybe well, so if it's a young program for me, so I mean, they've reached out to me a couple of times during the last year, everything okay kind of a thing. And do you have any questions? But it was not a government program. And I think what you might have been dealing with is probably magnitude more tedious and complicated than what I did. I found it relatively easy.
You know, that's interesting you say that too, because a lot of people, when they think cost share, that's just all they think about are the public programs that are out there. They don't really even realize there's these private programs out there. And it's not as simple as number one, what are you going to do? Go make a Google search when you don't even know what the program is called, and what you're needing may not match up to exactly what they're offering, but you may be a match once you finally find each other. And, that was what was so interesting to me when I created an account on NCX, was that I was able to put in the information about my specific property, its location, its size, and it automatically told me what programs I was eligible for, what programs I might be eligible for, and what programs I definitely was not eligible for. And that's to know what you're eligible for. You do have to give that specific information, because what's relevant to me in South Alabama may not be relevant to you. So one of the things I always hear about, and I'm certainly skeptical of giving out my information any more than I have to, because when you do, so often it just comes with so much solicitation, from marketing partners, and your information makes it to somebody else, and now they know where your land is and who you are, and a way to get in touch with you. Were there any obligations? Because you can go to NCX and you can look at their company and see what they do, but you're not really going to know what you're eligible for unless you create an account and explain where your land is. Were there any obligations that came with creating that account, sharing the specifics about your property?
No, I mean, you gave them they asked you to verify the outline of your property, and they've got all the mapping, and I guess it's called LIDAR equipment, and so they do the study, and then they get back to you and say, yeah, here, this property on this location is eligible for that. And that's a value, because I like you said, I mean, I'd either have to be really fascinated and want to make this my hobby to find this stuff out, and spend a lot of time, or it's just easier for them. It's easier to get them to just identify what you are and what you're eligible for, and you can start the process that way.
Did you feel like your information was shared at all, or did you have any unwanted solicitation?
I never got any unwanted solicitation. I never got, it was basically, let us know if you want to move forward. There was no pressure. There were no questions that I felt uncomfortable asking. I mean, I think the initial thing was just, tell us where your property is. That's not such, they could have looked, anyone can look up where my property is on a county GIS tax map. So, it's just public information anyway. They didn't ask for really anything other than my address and my phone number. That, and they never called me randomly to try to sell me, an insurance policy or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it happens,
Yeah,
unfortunately.
no, it does. But yeah, no, they seem to be very responsible.
You know, I found myself getting back on NCX a pretty good bit because they're constantly adding new programs. So I'll get on there and check things out to see if anything new has popped up from my area. How do you mentioned planting some trees in some areas that were, you know, kind of hard to manage. How do you see your partnership with NCX continuing as you go forward?
Well, you know, it's funny because I found that program through a friend, the Planting Trees program. And then later on, NCX said, "Hey, we've got this program to plant trees." And it's like, that's great. So I mean, I would imagine since they do that they have some sort of back checking when a new program comes on, and then they say, "Oh, here's your here's all your contacts. Do any of these match up?" And they reach out to you is what I suspected happened. And so I expect that if something comes up, if there's something else that I might want to do that comes up to them, that they'll let me know about it. I'm guessing that because they did that with the tree planting. It just happened to be, you know, after I'd already, or after the trees were already in the ground.
You know, managing my property, a lot of times I have to make decisions that it feels like I'm choosing between money and choosing between what I really want to do with the property, you know, and that's one of the things that I really like about incentive programs is that if you can find the right program, you don't have to make that decision. You know, you don't have to go, well, I got to take the money because I need it to manage the property or so on and so forth. A lot of times it allows you to meet your goals while still making enough income to do it. Otherwise, it becomes one of those situations where you mentioned your wife wanting the barn. You know, I could see that scenario where I'm going, well, you know, honey, I really would like to, you know, do this herbicide application because we've got this invasive plant community. Or, you know, I really would like to do a timber stand improvement. It's not going to bring us any money. In fact, it's going to probably cost us a little bit of money. And you know, she shares my love of our land, but she also still wants to get like her bathroom fixed up nice. You know, so it takes a lot of the pressure off in a lot of cases. So you know, you mentioned that a lot of the reason why you've done what you've done has been because you do have these environmental concerns, and you do have concerns for how the property is managed after you're no longer the one out there doing the work. What are some of your hopes for your property and you know, the surrounding community there as you move forward?
Well, we are getting encroached from city is getting built out. And so when I initially got the property, I thought, wow, this is really far from town. And town is starting to come to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, my vision is to just try to do within reason what feels right to enhance the property, to be a good custodian, and to pass that on so that, you know, my brief time here was a benefit to the property because the property was a benefit to me. And you know, I don't know that, you know, 200 years from now, you know, it's, you know, could be all condos on my place. But I'm just trying to do what I can reasonably within my abilities.
I like that ethos. You know, that's what I feel like most landowners are trying to do. They are trying to steward the property to the best of their ability. It's easy to sit back, I think, or easy to sit here now and look at what landowners were doing 100 years ago and go, oh, they were doing that wrong, you know, but they didn't necessarily know that at the time. I really do think most landowners want to leave their place better than they found it.
Yes.
I really do. I don't, in fact, I can't really ever recall a conversation I've had with somebody who owns the land where they know they were mistreating it and they were okay with it. You know, it was always a compromise if they were doing something that they didn't want to do. And the first thing that comes to my mind is I've been on several properties where financial needs have required a clear cut, and those same financial needs did not allow them to replant. And it wasn't because they didn't want to.
Right.
It was because they couldn't. And, you know, whether it's a forest carbon program or any of the other programs that are out there, the bottom line is that these programs can help landowners create some income and still manage their properties the way that they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that that is what most landowners want to do.
Yeah,
I really like what NCX has done from a landowner's perspective to be able to be that spot where you can go find out everything that might exist to help you on that path.
Yeah, no, I think they're adding a value, and they're making a more fluid market of the carbon market. And I mean, I think, like I said earlier, you know, maybe the carbon market isn't the best solution, but it is positive, and it's the best one we have now.
Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. I think it's really cool to hear how something as simple as a wooded lot next door to you as a kid really drove your passion and has sent you down this road. I mean, I'm sure that you didn't have any idea you were going down it until it just kind of started to develop.
Yeah, no, I actually didn't even realize that until you had asked me the question. Oh, yeah, that's kind of how it all happens.
Yeah. Well, it's a very cool story, man. If folks want to go read more about your story working with NCX or just learn from other landowners who are taking advantage of all the natural capital programs that are out there, how can they do it?
Yeah, I think I wrote a little bio, which I believe is on ncx.com blog. And I was one of the first ones they asked to write. And so I've got a couple of pictures and just kind of a lot of what I said between us on there. But yeah, they've got a lot of helpful resource information on their website.
Well, Jeff, I wish you luck up there, man. Land ownership's not for the faint of heart, and land management is not for the lazy. So I know you probably need to get off here and get back to doing work, but I appreciate you joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joseph.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that story from Jeff. If you are on the hunt for incentive programs, cost share programs, both public and private, or you're just trying to figure out how to manage your property in a way that is both viable from a financial perspective and an ecological perspective, I highly encourage you to go over to landowners.ncx.com and go ahead and sign up. It's really simple. There's no obligation. I've done it myself, and it is just mind-blowing the number of programs that are out there and available to you. And all you have to do is extend your hand and ask to be a part of them. Like I said earlier, I just got funded this year for a ton of practices that I've been wanting to do at my property that I've been putting off because of money, you know, just trying to save money and wait until that day that I had enough to do what I wanted to do. It didn't mean it didn't need to be done. And I'm going to be able to do that this year. So I highly encourage you again, go over to landowners.ncx.com and go ahead and create an account and see what's out there for you.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week.
Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. You got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.